Good morning. You're listening to The Garden Show on Raven Radio, KCAW in Sitka. I'm Molly Kabler in the studio with Kitty LaBounty.
Hello.
We're here to do the show live for the next 30 minutes, talk about gardening and what's going on in your garden in Southeast Alaska. If you would like to give us a call, we'd like to talk to you, 747-5877.
So, yeah, it's been, actually, I've spent probably the better part of the last couple weeks in my garden. The cloudy weather was, like, perfect for getting stuff planted. I know it doesn't seem like perfect gardening weather, but it's super nice for planting things out, and maybe we'll talk a little bit about why that is, because we wanted to talk about transplanting and getting stuff going. But, yeah, that was absolutely glorious. But I have a lot of aches and pains because of it.
The other thing that's going on is that the nights were warmer for several nights in a row. We had much warmer evenings, and that makes a big difference on getting seeds to germinate and things to start going along.
Yeah, no, I've got quite a few things going already in the garden. And the seeds are okay. I mean, it seems like all the brassicaceae, so all the cole crops, those seeds just like popped right away. Beets are always a little bit slow and a little bit fussy, and the carrots are a little bit slow and fussy, but they're coming along. But that kind of the cloudy and the very even sort of moisture that's mostly been available has been very handy for things getting going. One of the things I know I always want to talk about is the is transplanting and how you would pick out starts.
There's a lot of starts for sale and a lot of things that look good, and then there's starts that don't look so great. And you know, you can hedge your bet sometimes, and those starts that don't look great still do all right. But ideally, if you have a start, you want it to look really robust. And if it's a commercial start and it's super pot bound and it's a vegetable, that can be a problem. If it's a perennial plant, that's not much of a problem. It'll adjust just fine. And if it's a plant that grows easily from seed, it might not be great as a start if it's very root bound. And if you're starting your own starts, then you're good to go, and hopefully you'll get them planted on, and by that, either into a larger pot or into a bed before they have. I think the way to think about it is the plant sensing the edges of its pot? If it starts to feel like it's really sensing the edges of its pot, it begins to change behavior biologically and sense that there's limited resources and it's time to either go to seed or finish productivity or something. So the rule of thumb for planting on a start is hopefully it doesn't sense that it's inbounds.
And that's pretty difficult, because the nurseries here in town are getting plants from elsewhere, right? And so down south, Lower 48, where we get quite a few of our starts, those things are already, you know, they've been going for a while. So it's not really, you know, I don't blame the nursery for getting plants that are already like big and gorgeous and probably filling up their pots, because that's kind of the way it goes. Just in terms of timing. But you can still pick through those starts for annuals, either for, you know, vegetables or for flowers, and decide, hey, this one's going to work for me. One trick I've started doing was I try to go early and often, I guess. If I know I'm going to get some starts, I try to go earlier in the year, because, well, they were started earlier in the year and shipped up. So you get a little bit better selection, and the plants haven't been in the pots quite as long. But if I'm not quite ready to plant them out, I have a plethora of 4-inch pots, and I just like take them out of their little start packs, break them up a little bit, and I repot them until I'm ready.
Right. It's that's kind of what I'm describing as plant them on, right? So you're maybe not planting them in their final spot, but you're planting them in new dirt and with room and space so that they, you know, stay a vigorous start.
Yeah, I think we think about doing that a lot when we start our own seeds. because you're like on it, right? You're trying to keep them moving. But we often forget that there is no reason why you can't do that with a pot, a little starter pack that you buy from the nursery. It works super well.
And the nice thing about those starter packs that you're getting is sometimes the longest, most frustrating period is to get that seed to germinate and get it started. So it's awfully nice to have access to those starter packs. So it's, there's no value here that's ultimate in terms of whether you start your own seeds, whether you buy a starter pack or whatever. It's what you get in the end that you're working toward. And it's, if it's buying the starter pack and planting those on, you're good to go. And the other thing I think it's worth thinking about at the moment is it's not too late. So we kind of get in garden fever and we all think that, oh my gosh, something's got to happen between now and yesterday or last week or a month ago, or we're too late. We're certainly not too late. The soils are actually still warming up. And last night in my yard, it was in the high 30s. Ooh. So there's no, it's not too late. My, I've got some broccoli that's about 14 inches tall.
Nice.
And I have some that's just germinating. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of intentional. So if you're still just planting to get going, don't worry. You've got plenty of season left.
Yeah, I was kind of surprised, actually, how cool it was last evening. I was thinking, I do get in that, oh my gosh, it's too late. And then I look at the calendar and go, no, just chill out here. It's like, it's May. And it's not absolutely the end of May. So there's plenty of time. But it actually was kind of chilly. Now, today's completely opposite. I opened the greenhouse door because I was like, even the vent window is probably not going to be enough to really keep those plants ultimately happy. So it's kind of all over the board. And I think you have to, one, give yourself a break, and two, take extra good care of your plants, because it's just a little bit more extreme than we're really used to temperature-wise. I still think one of the best ways to take care of your plants is by using row cover. It protects them from the sun, which I know sounds nuts, but when you're moving plants outside, they need that protection. They haven't really had that full spectrum of sunlight yet, and it can be very intense for them. So give them a cover. It also keeps them a little moister, and there's always those insect things.
Right. The main reason is for your coal crops, your brassicas, is to keep the root maggots from them. That's the ideal reason to use Remay, and then there's all the side benefits that Kitty talked about. So transplants, we've talked a lot about it. If you have a question, 747-5877 is the number to call. We'd love to talk to you and answer your question. I know one of the things I often get asked is, if it is really root-bound, how do I deal with it when I take it out of that pot? And the way you deal with it is that you want to tease it apart a little bit, or even take off that white mat of roots. Take that off. You're going to need to water for 3 or 4 days in a row if you do that to a transplant, because you've really disrupted its root system. But if you leave that white mat, it won't sense that it's in the ground, and it'll just grow in a tiny little knot and not really reach out for nutrients and water and be a productive plant. So that's the trade-off.
I will admit that I do not tease mine apart gently. I usually take some sort of sharp object, or my hands, depending on how things are going. And if I use a knife, I'll just like make slashes on the side and just really try to open it up a little bit. But yes, after I do that, I water the heck out of that critter, because it's been through a little bit of stress. But it seems to actually help those plants. I mean, it seems pretty, destructive to take that root mass apart, but you really have to, whether it's an annual or a perennial. Now, perennials I might tend to be a little bit gentler with, but I still can get pretty, I want to be fairly aggressive with that root ball to kind of get it spread out.
If you're new to gardening and you're wondering, okay, now they're talking about annuals and perennials, what does that mean? And all it means is, if it's an annual, it's just going to be good for this year. You're just going to grow it 1 year, either because it's not going to survive the frost, or its life cycle is only for 1 year and it's going to die anyway. And a perennial is a plant that's going to persist. So pea persist perennial, that's the one that lives on for several years. And then sometimes those are the plants you might want to invest in the larger size when you're at the nursery, because they've already got an established root system. There's not a whole lot of point in buying big annuals. They're only going to be, you're only going to have them for 1 year anyway.
Yeah, no, the annuals this year have shown up in pretty reasonable size, but they don't need to already be blooming. A lot of the things that we buy that are annuals, we buy them because they're going to bloom all summer, and the way you keep them blooming all summer is by removing those flowers once they're spent. You also want to feed them, because we're asking a lot out of those plants. We want them to keep on pumping, keep on making flowers. Well, that takes nutrients, and so you need to supply some sort of nutrients to those flowers to get them to do it. So basically, how to keep those annuals happy is to get them out of their little starter packs, put them wherever you're going to put them, or put them in a bigger pot, and then feed them and deadhead them. And you will be very happy, I hope.
A lot of color is often what we're looking for, and there's sort of two strategies in your garden. If you have a perennial garden, plants that persist year over year, you can have your color come in waves. If you have a smaller pot or a barrel or something like that, you might want your annuals, because annuals tend to be longer blooming, a longer bloom time during the year, and it's easy to, as Kitty said, take those dead flowers off, and it's easier to have a contained amount of area that you're applying your fertilizer. And for me, it's just a liquid fertilizer. This is not something you're going to eat. You're not worrying about whether you're growing them organically. You're just growing them responsibly and using some regular liquid-type fertilizer is the easiest thing. Another way to go is if you have a larger container and you know you're going to not change all the plants. It's a mix, say, of perennials and annuals, which is just fine. You might add a product like Osmocote, which is a slow-release fertilizer. That'll serve you for a year and potentially a little bit into your second year. But if you grow things in a fairly large size pot or a barrel repeatedly several seasons, and you don't renew the soil or apply fertilizer, what you're going to see is that things stop blooming and they get crowded. So it's worth even taking and dividing things that are in a barrel or a bucket or a really tight container. And it's also worth fertilizing them. Now, we had a question sent in about a spirea and whether it's going to bloom in its barrel or not. And really, any plant will if it has the right conditions. And if it was blooming and it's not now, you have to think about what has changed. Sometimes it's the amount of shade in your home, a place where a plant bloomed previously and now it's shady and it doesn't seem to bloom. Well, it might not be getting enough sun. Hopefully you can move it. The other key thing often is soil fertility. Mm-hmm. It bloomed because it had some soil fertility and now it doesn't, because the soil is spent. The plant's pretty much used up as much of the nutrients as it could, and so you need to feed it up.
And when we talk about feeding up flowering plants, you don't want to go too hot and heavy with the nitrogen. They do need some nitrogen, but if you're looking for a mix, you want it to be slightly on the higher in the phosphorus than in the nitrogen. So if you're looking for a mix, and they give the amounts of nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium, so NPK, usually they give the amount of those nutrients on the package, if you go with the package. And for flowers, you want a higher phosphorus and a lower nitrogen. That will keep your spirea blooming. It will keep a lot of things blooming, but they do still need some nitrogen, so you don't want to go to the zero nitrogen. The other thing I was thinking about with containers is I am shifting completely away from deep containers, except for plants that need maybe a little bit more mass. So I have some miniature raspberries. I know that sounds wild. So I have small raspberry plants that were bred to be small raspberries. And so you can grow them on your deck in pots, which is actually super fun to walk out on the deck and pick raspberries. But those are the only ones that are kind of growing right now in standard size pots. And I do have to add compost to those and you trim the canes just like you would a regular raspberry. But those are the only ones that are in big pots. I'm like moving towards, you know, they're wide containers, but they're relatively shallow. They're maybe a foot at the most and probably more like 8 inches.
And why? What's your thinking on that?
My thinking is that I have to carry bags of soil or dig soil, and I do not want to carry soil all over the place. So that's my thinking, is that I'm mostly growing smaller plants in those or annuals, and they don't need that huge mass of soil. They just need, you know, that upper area. And 8 inches, you know, also will give them, you know, there's some pot edge there too. So that's not 8 inches of soil all the way to the top. It's probably more like 6. And it works fine. You do have to make sure you water them. That's always a trade-off, but by golly, I do not have to fill those with soil. I used to do all these crazy tricks of, like, you know, you'd put packing peanuts in the bottom and all sorts of crazy stuff in the deep barrels because you knew your plants were going to use it. Now I was like, why am I buying deep ones if I'm just going to fill it full of junk?
Right. You know, that's the thing in a container, is you have to really figure out what's going to work for you, how often can you water, and whether you're going to fertilize, and how often you'll fertilize, and how soon you're going to refresh that container. For an annual container, it seems very clear that shallower is an easier way to go. And in some respects, if you're buying soil, it's cheaper. You're buying soil.
Yes.
It's not as heavy, whatever, but you do have to stay up on the watering and the fertilizing.
Yes, and a lot of the smaller containers don't actually have holes punched in the bottom, I've noticed. They have an insert so that the water stays at the bottom, and that could be another little, I might be, you know, drilling holes in the bottom of those containers just because it's like, if I go away and we have a deluge, that pot will be drowning basically. Not a problem most of the time, but when it's a problem, it could be avoided.
Yeah.
So yes, I'm liking those half size containers, and actually I just filled a bunch of stuff with them, and I bought a couple of new ones because I thought they were pretty. This is what happens when I go to the garden stores and I fill them full of screaming brightly colored annuals, usually long-living daisies, and then I tuck in a few other things. So it's like, I have noticed when I buy things on gray days, they tend to be pretty freaking bright. So I have purple and hot pink and orange, and I'm like, oh yeah, that's what I needed.
So this is the end of May, and we've had a fairly warm May. We've had several nights that were chilly, but the days have been pretty warm. I remember in the past, snow and ice in May. We didn't have much for snow and ice this year during May, even though we had a few clear, cold nights. And the rhododendrons are really coming on. Not terribly early, but they're doing a good job. And your perennial gardens are coming on. Now, the first ones we see for perennials are the primroses, and they're mostly done. Now it's daffodils, they're mostly done, so the tulips are showing. And then after that, if there's no color in your garden, you need to be looking around and figuring out what perennials to plant to help you have a show beyond the first flush of spring.
Yes, I kind of rely on my daffodils, which fortunately, if you're a daffodil nut, you can have daffodils that are blooming for like 3 months. So I still have a pile of daffodils going. And then those do disappear, and I get a little panicky because my garden has a ridiculous number of daffodils in it. But I do start relying more on perennials. And then lately, something has come to me about putting more annuals in my perennial beds. So I've started to put more nasturtiums and calendulas and sweet peas and things like that in there. One, I came to the decision that it might ultimately be easier to maintain a bed with more daffodils, can't do without daffodils, right? More bulbs and with annuals than with perennials. Mostly because you can kind of clear it out for the most part at the end of the year, clear it out, throw some mulch over it, and then just slowly, you know, replant. And if you start all your seeds yourself, you can still get a pretty good variety of annuals in there. So who knows? Ultimately, you know, in the next 20 years, I may become more of an annual gardener because I've decided that's easier with the aging joints.
Then the big process of digging up and dividing
yes.
perennials.
Yes.
So that's, you know, so we're talking about irises and lilies and
primroses.
Yeah, even the primroses, yeah. delphiniums.
The bee balms.
Bee balms, monk's hoods, some of the big
yep.
daisies that are perennial,
yep.
phlox. These are all plants that can take over your garden or get to the point where you have a ring.
Mm-hmm.
And what that means is you have a green ring and inside the plant is kind of bare in the middle,
mm-hmm.
and if it's not bare, it's not blooming in the middle. It's only blooming on the outside edge. And that's the sign of a perennial that needs renewal. There's a couple ways to go about that. You can take a sharp shovel and cut it right down the middle and haul out half of it or three quarters of it and rebuild your soil around it. You don't even have to move that quarter that's rooted there. Or you can dig the whole thing up and cut it into pieces or just take some of the outer edge of the perennial that seems to be growing most vigorously and plant that back in a spot. And this gives you an opportunity to refresh soil, mm-hmm. nutrients, and,
right.
and, you know, around that perennial. And it should do much better than that.
Yeah.
I mean, than it was doing.
Right, right. And I'm not to the throwing in the towel yet on my perennials because I love our blue poppies. I love bee balm. I love all those things that do super well. But every year I notice that, boy, it's a lot easier to get the vegetable garden all set than it is the perennial garden, because that's the spot where you need to do the dividing. That's the spot, if you were foolish enough like I was, to bring in some ground covers, that you're doing some nonstop ground cover battle. It does take a little bit more. I have some shrubs also in my perennial bed, small ones that I also dearly love. And so that's another strategy, is to have shrubs that bloom at various times of the years. And there's winter blooming ones. There are spring, summer. You can actually do super well with blooming shrubs, bulbs, and annuals if you are like, wait, I'm not going to like fight all these perennials.
Another thing that works is to look at the leaves of a plant,
mm-hmm.
and get the variety and the eye-catching interest by the leaves. So the hostas and the heucheras, and the common name of the heucheras are coral bells,
mm-hmm.
but they seem to go more as heucheras now. They come in lots of different colors, and the heucheras in different shapes, bright yellows or deep reds to purple, mottled, striped, and then the hostas tend to have a pretty big leaf, and they come in greens,
mm-hmm.
and stripes, and ranging toward yellow gold or different colors of greens. And that's another way to put a lot of interest
right.
in your perennial bed. And those leaves generally keep those colors going the whole season. So even though it's not a bloom,
mm-hmm.
it's high interest.
Yes, I totally agree with that. I have actually a few hostas in that same bed. It's a rather crowded bed at times, but I really do like those big luscious plants, and I have one that's kind of bluish green that I really like that has a lot of texture in the leaves as well, these kind of folds, and another one that's a mixture of white and green. So it looks cool during the day, but it also looks really cool at twilight. So it's kind of fun to have white in your garden for those evening hours when, you know, it's like those bright colors start to fade out. I mean, I'm a fool for bright colors, but I also really enjoy having white flowers in the garden because of that evening time. So think of a big mix if you can. And you can achieve that mix through so many different ways. You can do it with annuals. You can do it with perennials. You can do it with a mixture of all of the above. So it's your garden. Make your choices.
Hardy geraniums, monk's hood, columbines, these are all really easy perennials to grow. The lilies, you sometimes have to choose a little bit carefully, but lilies are super persistent,
mm-hmm.
and come back over time. There's just some of the
Veronica's?
Veronica's. Thank you. I needed a VR. The Veronica's are long lasting mm-hmm. and bloom a little later in the season. So it's really nice to spread it out. That's the beauty of perennials. If you can find a variety of them and plant them, you should have a pretty good show across the season.
So we meant to talk about vegetables, too. We get kind of lost on flowers because flowers are gorgeous. But I love having the vegetables in the garden, too. So actually, in truth, my vegetable garden is much bigger than my flower garden. And it's, you know, has space for all sorts of things, but it never quite seems like there's enough space for everything. So some of my potatoes are in pots and all sorts of crazy things. But right now, it seems like planting is a good thing to do in your garden if you haven't... You can continue planting. I mean, I'll probably still be planting new stuff into the end of June, especially if I want it for later in the year. But remember to thin. Thinning is one of those painful things that you don't always want to do, but you really need to, particularly with everything. But carrots are one of the kind of classic ones because they're a little bit difficult to, you know, plant those individual seeds out in a nice spacing. So go in there with your little tiny, I like the little tiny scissors technique, and I just cut off where I've messed up and gotten too many in there. And I'll do that with beets and carrots and whatever else. But the little scissors are nice because you don't disturb the plant that you're trying to leave.
Yeah, it's tricky because their root systems are tiny already, you know, very tiny, but they're going to have the best bet if they're the only guy in town. Mm-hmm. They need what we call shoulder room. So anything that's a root vegetable, it will not have much for productivity if you don't give it some room. So as Kitty said, carrots, radishes, head lettuces, mm-hmm. or the cost style lettuces. Certainly if you're direct seeding any of the big brassicas, they will just choke each other out. And by that, I mean the broccolis and cabbages and cauliflowers and,
even turnips.
Yeah. They need room.
So go in there. It's a little painful sometimes, to do that. 'Cause you're like, wait, I just grow this. But a lot of those you can eat the, what you've thinned anyway, so just toss them into your little salad so it won't feel like such a total loss. I tend to feed my plants a little bit over time, my vegetables, you know, and I'll give them kind of either some sort of like liquid fish fertilizer, a little drink every now and again, or add a little bit more bone meal or something like that. But I'm trying to kind of feed mine up this year, trying to keep on that a little bit more. And because I think it does make a big difference. If you've been growing plants in the same place for years, you do start to lose some fertility, despite the fact that you're tossing in all sorts of things. You know, you're adding compost, you're adding seaweed, but it still is going to need some oomph.
And if you've used the same sources of fertilizer or nutrition or soil builder, you're still going to have micronutrient differences that mm-hmm. could benefit from something different. And I like to think we have a variety of things. You can use your own compost. You can use brewery waste. You can use coffee waste. You can purchase bone meal or blood meal. Those are some that are available.
I think you can buy compost.
Yeah, and you could probably buy compost. Uh-huh. I'm not sure how alive it is. You can buy the animal manures too. Mm-hmm. These are all good sources, and it's better to buy and apply than to not have enough productivity on all the work you've gone to get your plants and start your seeds.
Yeah, so it's definitely worthwhile putting in that time to go through and feed. And then you can't say feed without saying weed, not just because it rhymes, but it just, you got to. So weed, feed, deadhead, and your garden will thank you for it, and you will be very happy.
Thanks so much for joining us this morning. Garden Show, I'm Molly Kabler.
And I'm Kitty Lee Bounty. We should be back with you in mid-June. I think it's June 15th, but we will keep you posted on that. Remember, if you have any questions, you can send them to us or post it on the Raven Radio Facebook page. It's been fun talking with you, Molly, about gardens and talking to all of you out there.